The next case for argument is 22-2232, Bryson Pharma v. Alex Remond. We're ready whenever you are, sir.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mark Tung for the appellant, Ryzen Suzhou Pharmatech. So before us today, there are two issues. One is whether the PTAB erred in failing to properly apply the lead compound test. And the second issue is whether the PTAB violated the APA in citing the Costanza reference for the first time in the final written decision. I'll proceed first with the first issue, which I think will take most of the time, but I would like to address the second issue as well. So on the first issue, on the lead compound test, it's our position that the lead compound test is what the parties agreed should be the right standard. And while the final written decision mentions the test, it does not actually apply the first step in that test, which is the identification of a lead compound, the selection process. As noted,
I was very taken aback by Blue, because taking it at face value, when I turned to the board decision, I didn't expect to find anything about lead compound. And frankly, there are at least 6 or 7 pages that talk about lead compound. I didn't see any problem with their articulation of what the test is. They cited Takeda, they cited the other case, and then your answer in gray, once Red pointed that out, seemed to be, well, they were just taking snippets, and I didn't see where they were not developing a fulsome argument. Now, the board did talk about Dillon, but they didn't talk entirely about the so-called Dillon test as opposed to the Takeda test. So what's wrong with what the board did? What, are you saying there's legal error here in something the board said about lead compounds?
Yes. So the lead compound test, from what we see in the case law, has 3 steps. The first step is the selection of a lead compound. This is what...
One or more.
Yes.
We're not multiple lead compounds.
That's correct. Sure. Right. So the Takeda says that it's the compound in prior art that would be most promising to modify. So that's step one. That's actually where the criticism is. It's not on the remaining steps, which is the motivation to modify.
Well, how many compounds did they pick here?
So they picked 2 compounds.
2. Okay. As the most promising.
That's right.
2 very closely related compounds, as it happens.
Yes, but I guess, and here's really where our dispute is. Those 2 compounds are the only 2 compounds they considered. There was never a comparison done to select the most promising. And the word most is important here, as well as the word lead and lead compound test, because the entire purpose of the test is to help prevent hindsight bias, where you look at the patent at issue. With that in front of you, you go select the prior art references.
But the board, and you know, we give some deference, I'm not sure on this issue exactly where deference lies, but the board had quite a bit of discussion in terms of why these were promising candidates. So what do I miss? I mean, where's the clear error here in what the board did or did not do with respect to picking another compound?
That's exactly right. Because the word most, just like more or most, is a comparative term. It's not just finding a promising compound. It's finding the most promising. That's what the case law says. And that word alone suggests there's a comparison. If you look at the cases that follow...
So what are you saying under the analysis that Takeda requires that a fact finder do? You acknowledge, Judge Bryson, that most promising doesn't need to be just one. It can be two. So does the fact finder have to dismiss or compare everything else out there in order to establish that these were promising compounds, just pick as the lead compound?
No, this is not... I mean, we're still under a KSR framework, which, you know, everyone knows is a flexible framework.
Right.
So we're not saying it's such a rigid test that it's a rigorous compare every single compound in the prior art. But we are saying that there needs to be some basis for selecting these two and not just looking at these two alone in isolation. You have to look at the prior art because, and again, trying to avoid hindsight, at this time, there were other candidates.
How much prior art do you have to look at? The board looked at quite a lot of prior art here, didn't it? There were 13 studies of these particular compounds that they started with.
Yes, but the board did not do a comparison. For example, we raised at least five other compounds that were potential candidates. They were not discussed in the final written decision. Why pick the candidates that the only compounds that
you raised those before the board?
Was that
you raised those other five compounds before the board?
Yes, it was in the briefing. That's right.
So the board was aware of those other five compounds at least. That's just didn't discuss them, I guess.
Did they discuss them in the decision itself when they recited Pat Miller's argument? Did they just ignore it? Did they just not put the stuff in, or did they articulate what the? I thought they typically articulate what the Pat Miller's arguments are.
Yeah, they lay out the arguments, but they don't actually do a comparison. And I think that's really where the crux of the matter is. In order to say that these two compounds that the board did look at are the most promising, you have to look at the other compounds that have been raised and say, well, these are better. These are somehow more promising than the other ones that are raised. Otherwise, there isn't a step one. There isn't a comparison to select the most promising.
So can you point me in the board decision where at least I'm looking at what they, when they're reciting what the patent owner said. So it seems like they're putting in your arguments about why they wouldn't have selected these compounds. I'm looking for...
Excuse me. You're looking for where the board talks about the...
Where do they talk about the five compounds you asked them to compare to?
Give me a second. I apologize, I actually don't see that they marched through the other five. I know they were raised in the briefing, but
Is it your contention that the board entirely overlooked the comparisons that you asked it to make?
Yes. Certainly, I don't see the comparisons in the final written decision. And I think more importantly, there's one thing whether it lists it or not. And that one I don't see here looking over the opinion. But more importantly, in the analysis portion, there is no analysis between which one is better. That's really where the crux of our issue is.
On the lead compound, is it your contention that the board was required to apply lead compound analysis because that's what our case law requires? Or is the error simply that you think the parties agreed they should apply lead compound and somehow the board didn't go along with your agreement?
So I think the answer is both. We think
where have we said that lead compound analysis is required even if the parties don't agree to it.
Yeah, so when there is a new chemical compound, and I'll give you the citations, I think Daiichi 619 F3rd at 1352. And here in the case it says, proof of obviousness based on structural similarity requires clear and convincing evidence that a medicinal chemist of ordinary skill would have been motivated to select and then to modify a prior art compound, e.g. a lead compound. So that's one site. The next site is at Asai 533 F3rd at 1357.
And what was the name of that second case?
I'm sorry, it's Asai,
E-I-S-A-I. Oh, it's Asai. Okay.
Sorry, I may not be pronouncing it correctly.
Sorry, you also contend that if the parties, even if our case law doesn't require lead compound in a case like this, if the parties agree to a legal standard, then the board is compelled to apply that legal standard? Is that part of your argument as well?
I think that, I mean, unless it's such a clearly erroneous matter of law to apply the standard, because the briefing was done with that standard in mind.
So, at bottom, is it your argument and your challenge to what the board did predominantly its failure to discuss or to analyze your argument that there were other compounds that were more promising than the ones it selected? Is that what your beef is with the board's opinion?
I think that's basically right. I mean, I think that the test is a little broader than just the compounds that the parties raised, but I think as a practical matter, the argument was raised and it was not considered by the board.
You want to turn to the other issue now?
Sure. So the other issue is that the board cited a reference, De Costanzo, in its final written decision for an important proposition. In fact, the board cited it for, and here's the quote from...
What's the page number?
APPX 70, which is the final written decision, page 70. It says, the board said it was generally known in the art at the time of invention that when deuterium is incorporated into molecules in place of hydrogen, in most respects, the deuterated compound is very similar to the all-natural abundance hydrogen compound.
And isn't that just a simply... wasn't Costanza just cumulative of lots of places in the record? I acknowledge the board didn't point to it, but on that almost undisputed fact about deuterium, I think the experts talked about it. Morgan talks about it. Isn't this just cumulative of what's already in the record?
It's not for one important reason, and I didn't get to raise this in earlier, but for example, Morgan was cited in our opening brief, in the appellate brief, which cited to our POPR, patent owner preliminary response, for the fact that the deuterated or isotopically modified compounds may have very, very different biological properties when they're actually used. And so there is actually a dispute on this point. This is not a given, generally known point. We certainly dispute it. We're not able to make a specific criticism on De Costanzo on that point. And so on the one hand, we don't dispute that this issue is raised. In fact, it's a pretty central issue to the IPR. But we do dispute that, given that Costanzo was raised for the first time in the final written decision, there was no chance to criticize it. I mean, even all we have is the title. We don't even have the reference.
But Morgan cites De Costanzo for this proposition, if I recall correctly, and indeed there's that includes the reference to De Costanzo, right? So the question is really going back to Judge Stark's question is, let me put it this way. Had the board put in a citation to Morgan instead of a citation to De Costanzo, you wouldn't have any argument on this point, right?
That's right. I mean, the point is really on De Costanzo.
Okay. You're into your rebuttal, so I'm going to go from the other side.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mark Feldstein on behalf of Appellee Alcyon, Inc. There were great questions raised during the questioning of Patent Owners' Counsel, and I can answer one of them in terms of the five compounds. I think on appendix page 40 in the final written decision.
So you're talking about his criticism that the board failed to contrast or compare or deal with the compounds.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so page
40. Appendix 40 addresses Patent Owners' argument that there are these other compounds that should be compared. And I think what's important to recognize here is this is not a case like Daiichi, where in Daiichi you had a metric, potency, and the court was looking at comparative potency. In Daiichi, there was a second generation of compounds that had 100, 180 times greater potency, and the court there said, if we're going to measure potency, the second generation compounds are the starting point, not the ones that are proffered by the challenger. Here, what Patent Owners puts in says, hey, there are these five other compounds, do some sort of mechanical comparison to them. But there's no evidence, there was no argument on why these five compounds would be, like Daiichi, chosen over the compounds Tramiprosate and Val-APS. And so there's nothing mutually exclusive about the idea that there were other compounds out there. There are other compounds that may have been leads for other direction. But
let me ask you, so you pointed out, and the board at least summarizes what the patent owner argues. In the citations that are here or whatever, was there a fulsome argument in comparison in what the patent owner submitted as to why these would have been preferable from one selected?
No, Your Honor. They're just proffered as, here are other compounds. I think maybe some, there may have been an argument that, they're not argued as why they'd be chosen over Tramiprosate and Val-APS. They're presented as other things that some mechanical comparison should be made against. There is no requirement for this mechanical comparison. There is no requirement for a side-by-side. It happens in some cases where you have a metric that you're doing a comparison on, and the challenger says, hey, I'm going to pick this compound because it's potent. That doesn't apply here. Those are the cases where you have some list, some mass of compounds, and you're trying to filter through them. Here the facts are that the art had already identified Tramiprosate and Val-APS as literally, quote, promising candidates. You don't need more evidence to know that they're promising candidates. Your Honor, Judge Stark, you brought up...
There would be a difference, I would think, if you had... I mean, maybe the fact that there are two promising candidates out of a group of seven is... Maybe that is enough to make them lead compounds for purposes of analysis. But if you had two promising candidates among a group of 100 other promising candidates, you really couldn't say at that point that, aha, these are the two that should be identified as a lead compound, could you?
Perhaps, Your Honor, but that's not the evidence we have here. We have two promising compounds. We have their patent admitting that Tramiprosate is a promising compound consistent with the art. And we have five other compounds that they said, hey, you should have made a comparison to. And then we have this massive chart that's quoted, copied in the final written decision, I think appendix 69 or 70, that shows just this massive universe and the implications.
Unreadable largely, the chart.
Yeah. And that you they're rejecting the idea that we have to go and do and select out the most promising candidate out of this entire mass, out of this entire universe. There's no need for that, where the art, including the admissions from the patent owner, already point to and already using the compound as a lead. That happened in the BMS case that we cite, where the compound that was presented as the lead compound was already being used as a lead compound for further development. The hindsight issue that the lead compound analysis is preventing is going back and trying to do a retrospective analysis of the art. What would someone have thought if they looked back at all this massive data? That's not an issue here, where the art, like in BMS, says, here is something that people have to consider promising, here's something that people are continuing to develop, here is something that continues to show interest, here is something that is being used as a lead compound already.
To the extent that comparison is required by the law, you would say the comparison had already been done before this case even arose. It had been done in the prior art, and that should be sufficient under the law?
Correct, Your Honor. Here, the recognition in the art is a comparison on how did it bubble to the top, how did it bubble to the top of people's interests, how did it bubble to the top of the admitted promising compound candidate that is recognized in the patent.
So what is your view of the legal situation here? Is a lead compound analysis, sort of in quotes, is that required in a case like this, or particularly in this case?
I think it's one way to establish, clearly one way to establish obviousness. And I think I think it's in Altana where they are addressing the idea that, like the teaching suggestion motivation test, it's informative post-KSR of a way to find obvious, but it's not a rigid rule. And the bottom line is a reasoned identification for the lead compound starting point.
And what about the two cases that were cited to us, Isai and Daiichi? Yes. Did we not require, as a matter of law, a lead compound analysis in those cases?
No, there's not a requirement as a matter of law for a lead compound with a comparative analysis. They were certainly applying.
Okay, I think we're talking about. I'm a little confused because I think we're not talking about a comparison anymore. We're just talking about the requirement for a lead compound.
So, Takeda, if I can answer from Takeda, Takeda is clear. If Your Honor is asking, could Dillon still apply? If that's the context.
That'd be another way to put it. I think. Yeah.
Is that what Takeda says? Dillon's an en banc decision, I believe, and Takeda says, this law still applies. It makes sense to look for structural similarity in certain cases where things are so close, homologs, isomers, analogs. There's nothing closer than the two neutron difference we have here. And what Takeda says is, Dillon's good, but you still have to then have a reason to make this modification. And so you don't have to, in some circumstances where the structure is so close, a homolog, an isomer, an analog, and in this case, the PTAB found the same elements, hydrogen, deuterium, two neutron difference, that Dillon is the most applicable analysis. But they did Dillon plus. They did Dillon plus Takeda, where they went and then looked at, are there specific reasons to modify trimeprosate or VAL-APS to make the modifications? They found there were. That's similar to this, essentially the second part of lead compound.
So I'm hearing that as you read our case law as not absolutely requiring a, quote, lead compound analysis in this case, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, so putting aside our case law for the moment, what about, was there not an agreement in this case to do it? And relatedly, if you wouldn't mind, if we said lead compound for whatever reason is required here, are we allowed to pick and choose through what the board found to come up with our own lead compound analysis when they say they're not doing it?
I don't think you need to pick and choose. They did both analyses. They said Dillon's the most applicable. We're going to tell you why it's true under Dillon. And then at appendix 65 to 66, they say, here are the two tests for the two-part test.
Do you need the board opinion as having applied the Takeda lead compound analysis? Because I did.
I did, absolutely. They cite Otsuka citing Takeda on 65 to 66, and they say it's got two parts.
So they did both.
You're right.
But I read it as certainly applying the lead compound analysis of Takeda. It may have been a different, sort of different, because the universe here was so much more limited. But you agree that they applied the lead compound?
They absolutely applied the lead compound analysis.
Whether or not, because I threw a lot at you, whether or not they did both, did you in fact agree in front of the board that they had to do a lead compound analysis?
The argument that was presented by petitioner was a lead compound analysis, and we agreed it was applicable. I don't think that we agreed that we made any commitment or any position that Dillon couldn't also apply, but clearly petitioner's argument was that it was lead compound. The board, in its institution decision, raised Dillon pretty much on its own, and then the parties addressed it. But I don't think that the agreement or the common proffering of lead compound was to the exclusion of alternatives. We just proved our case below under lead compound. The board said, you know what, the Dillon under plus Takeda is the closest art and the closest case law and analyzed under that also.
Is there any, setting aside the names we attach to these doctrines, which I think can be mischievous in and of itself, but is there any fundamental difference between lead compound or Dillon? Or aren't they doing the same thing? You look for a starting point that makes sense and that a poser would look at. And then you ask, how should I or could I modify this in a way that a poser would have expectation would work? Isn't that what we're talking about, whether we call it lead compound or whether we call it Dillon?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I think the one piece to add to what the cases are saying in terms of the first step, it needs to be a non-hindsight reason. It needs to be a reason from the art.
Right. And if the art... Something that is out there that we oppose it would understand to be a good starting point.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Sometimes I think that we create names for these doctrines and then we silo them out there, and there's no reason to do that. It seems to me that the fundamental element of what's going on is the same across these various doctrines.
Right. And that's what your cases recognize as well. They recognize especially... trying to rationalize post-KSR, they say it's a flexible test. Bottom line is you need a reasoned identification of a starting point.
You want to turn quickly to Costanza?
Sure. So Costanza is irrelevant to lead compound analysis. It has one, if the court agrees that the board did a lead compound analysis, Costanza only comes up in the context of Dillon. So Costanza is just completely irrelevant.
It's a decostanza, right?
It was brief as Costanza. Yeah, I don't know why, how that started.
Center fielder for the Yankees was not Joe Maggio.
Yeah. It is decostanza, Your Honor. Absolutely. And the reliance, where decostanza is cited, it's cited in the context of why the board thinks that Dillon per Takeda is a relevant legal analysis. And the first thing that they address on why did they think Dillon's relevant is on page 64, appendix 64, that it's undisputed that deuterium is the same element as hydrogen. And then they go on that it's a two-neutron difference. So in terms of whether there's structural similarity, even before the paragraph that's addressing decostanza, they've already identified undisputed evidence, undisputed positions, that there's structural similarity. They're the same element, two neutron difference. I haven't heard an argument from Ryzen that there is not structural similarity between trimipostate and deuterate trimipostate, val APS and deuterate val APS. So I haven't heard that it even matters that you get to decostanza, that it even matters any of this, because there doesn't seem to be a substantive dispute that there is structural similarity here.
So your position is there was no error, and even if it were harmless error?
At best, it's harmless error, because there's a standalone paragraph already addressing the premise, sufficient premise to find structural similarity.
But the same statement, essentially, was in Morgan.
It absolutely was, Your Honor. And DeCostanza said that there is a C site. It's a C site for the proposition that, in most respects, it's similar. And what comes up in Ryzen's briefing is they talk about property differences. There may be property differences. They may speak to unexpected results. But the differences in properties aren't differences in structures. And so there's really no reason to dispute here that there's a difference in structure. And so decostanza is cumulative on an undisputed finding from the board that there's a same elements, two neutron difference, and the general knowledge that they're similar in most respects.
It may well be a harmless error, but I'm unclear on how it's not error. I mean, why go to all the trouble of putting together a record and requiring the board to consider things on the record if they can just go ahead and pull things off a shelf that counsel didn't even know about and start relying on it as the basis for its findings?
It is not clear to us, Your Honor, why decostanza was cited and not Morgan. It seems to be that the board was paraphrasing Morgan's citation of
the speculation. I'm sure you saw it, that maybe the patent owner beat back Morgan in an earlier stage of the proceeding because it said something about unpredictability, and the board was scared about that, so they just skipped over Morgan.
But there's substantively no dispute that the structures are similar. So it's at best a harmless error because it's a tertiary point on structural similarity and it's an immaterial point on structural similarity because there's no substantive dispute they're not structurally similar. One could take a marker and cross off the De Costanza paragraph and the decision would stand, the analysis on why Dillon makes sense would stand, and the entirely separate lead compound analysis would stand.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If you have any questions for me, please ask them. If otherwise, I have two points to make. One is that counsel for appellee said several times that there is no dispute that there is no structural similarity. But the point here is it's not just is it structurally similar. The question is it obvious in light of the prior art? And you know, as we noted in our briefing, there's a cite to Morgan at page 230 on how different the properties could be. In fact, the fact that the hydrogen and deuterium differ by a neutron could make all the difference in the world in terms of how it reacts in the body, and that has certainly patentability effects. And so I don't think that structural similarity is the end of the inquiry. In fact, if you look at the citation in Daiichi, this is at 1354, it says that the attribution of a compound as a lead compound must avoid hindsight bias. It must look at the state of the art at the time of invention was made to find a motivation to select. And then it goes on to say, accordingly, proving a reason to select a compound as a lead compound depends on more than just structural similarity. So structural similarity doesn't get you there. You need something more. And that's what the case law says. This was Daiichi is a different part than what I quoted in the beginning of my opening argument. And so, you know, I think that there is still error in the application of the lead compound test.
Thank you.